Hello, and thanks for checking out the podcast edition of our classroom project called The Forgottonia Project. I'm excited to share on this edition an outstanding conversation about race and rural America with Dr. Alfonso Simpson. Dr. Simpson is a professor of African American Studies at Western Illinois University and also serves as chair of the Department of Liberal Arts and Sciences. He's been teaching at WIU since 2000 and is the author of three books, Mother to Son, a collection of essays and readings in African American Studies, Ain't Nobody Worryin', Maleness and Masculinity in Black America, and Living the Life I Sing, Gospel Music from the Dorsey Era to the Millennium. Our essential questions are, how do we talk about race in rural America, and what advice do you have for young people growing up in rural counties that are predominantly white? Speaking with Dr. Simpson was super enjoyable and informative. I learned a lot from this talk and know you will too. With me today is Quentin Gilpin. He is a sophomore at Cuba High School. We just call him Q. So what's up, Q? Thanks for being on, and please tell us a little about yourself.
Thanks for having me. Well, I like to play sports a lot. My favorite sport is baseball. My favorite candy bar is Starburst, and I love to read a lot, so yeah.
What book are you reading, like, right now?
Is it a book about Starburst? It's a book about, like, my value up, about the speaker that just came in.
Oh, yeah, you got his autograph and stuff, too. I saw that, yeah. Let me borrow that when you're done.
All right.
A.K.A. have it.
All right.
No, I just want to borrow it. Q, I know you pretty well, man. Can I ask you a personal question?
Yeah.
What is your most favorite class you've ever had, all time?
It's probably current events, because you get to learn about all the news and what's going on in the world today, so yeah.
You have a class about just current events?
Yeah.
That's cool. Who teaches that, I wonder?
Mr. Brewer.
I probably got to edit that out. A little self-plug there. Well, I asked you because my favorite class of all time is I actually took a class with Dr. Simpson called Race and Gender. It was at WIU, and it was one of the most eye-opening aha experiences of my life. It challenged me. It changed the way I see the world today. And so it's my sincere hope that students really consider what Dr. Simpson has to say.
To begin our conversation, we asked Dr. Simpson to share his journey brought to Western Illinois University and how he likes living in Macomb, Illinois.
And what a unique journey it is. It's a journey that starts in a small town in southern Alabama called Andalusia. That's where he grew up. And Andalusia is known for something pretty cool that he'll tell you about. Now, students listening for class should be able to answer the following questions. Number one, what is the name of the historically black college that Dr. Simpson attended? And why wasn't this the place that introduced him to AAS, which is African American Studies? Number two, where did Dr. Simpson first learn about AAS? And why is this unique? And a bonus question on that, the Matthew Shepard incident occurred while he was a student there. So who is Matthew Shepard and what is significant about this incident? And then number three, finally, what does Dr. Simpson both love and loathe about living in Macomb, Illinois?
My name is Alfonso Simpson Jr. I'm a full professor and chair of the Department of Liberal Arts and Sciences here at Western Illinois University. My concentration here at Western is African American Studies. I was hired to teach African American Studies. However, my degree path was music education to curriculum and instruction to education, adult education, and African American Studies in music. And so it kind of came around full circle. So I wasn't introduced to African American Studies until my PhD program. Believe it or not, I went to Alabama State University as my undergraduate in Montgomery, Alabama, of all places, and was not introduced to African American Studies because Alabama State is historically black college and university. And contrary to popular belief, HBCUs don't necessarily house African American Studies departments. So then I went on to the University of Missouri Columbia, where there was a large black student population, and they had the Black Student Union and all of those things for African American students. But I still, in graduate school, never got a chance to, you know, jump over into African American Studies. Because I was in curriculum and in the department, the College of Education, and music.
Okay.
And then I got to Wyoming, of all places, you know, where the percentage of African American people or black people was less than 1% in Laramie. I was in Laramie, Wyoming. As a matter of fact, like I told you a long time ago when you guys were in the class, you know, the Matthew Shepard thing happened while I was there. So a little bit more about me. I am from a little rural town in Alabama, Andalusia, Alabama. Yeah. Nobody's probably ever heard of it. What can we boast of in Andalusia, Alabama? We host the world championship for dominoes. Domino tournament is in Andalusia, Alabama. And 15 minutes down the road in Op, Alabama is the International Rattlesnake Rodeo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I hate snakes. But anyway, yeah, I came from a home where my parents are both educators. And I have a really interesting story that I'm not going to share right here, but I will just kind of give you a glimpse of it. Contrary to popular belief, once again, my mom and my dad, you know, have always been my mom and dad. They've always been there, you know, and they're still there. And that's a wonderful thing. And I'm saying that to say there is no divorce. There was no separation. There are no outside children or those types of things that go along with the stereotypes, which we'll get into, I'm certain, of people of color or people, you know what I'm saying, of minorities. My mom and dad were both educators. They're retired now. My grandmother was a principal. My sister, you know, is a high school teacher, and I teach college. My mom teaches middle school. My dad taught elementary. You know, really, really interesting story I have. We have a very long history at Alabama State University and all that kind of stuff, which brings me to this place. Yeah. As I told you, I left Alabama and went to Missouri to Wyoming, and I got a job offer in Macomb, Illinois, mm-hmm. of all places. Mm-hmm. I came here with my brand new wife, and we came here. We got married in August, got married in June and moved here in August, yeah. you know, of 2000. Yeah. And this is where we started. And this is where we've been ever since. So I've been in Macomb, Illinois 17 years. I'd say I'm a resident. You know,
yeah.
I'm not a Macomb homie. I won't claim that. My children are because they were born and raised here. I have two daughters, a 10th grader and now a 7th grader. And they're both at Macomb Junior High. They like Macomb because this is home for them. Mm-hmm. I like Macomb for what it offers. And when I say what it offers security. It offers a safe place to raise a family and those types of things. But as far as being an African-American person, mm-hmm. in a place like Macomb, Illinois, I absolutely loathe mm-hmm. it. I hate it, mm-hmm. you know. And I try to use the word hate loosely because it's just the amenities that are here. There's nothing here cultural.
Yeah.
There's nothing here, you know, I have to cut my own hair. There's no barbershop there. Yeah. I'm still doing that. Do you remember when I talked about that way back when you were in the class?
Yeah.
I'm still cutting my own hair. You know, our children, you know, we have to do those types of things to search for things that, you know, African-American people need or, you know, would generally like to have. It's not in Macomb. You know, businesses and the jobs that are available aren't necessarily, you know, they higher in the good old boy system. I mean, it's a farming community, so they mm-hmm. hire people who are, you know, not just farm hands, but people who know that, you know, that industry. And so it's difficult. It's getting a little better since the time that you were here as mm-hmm. far as, you know, hiring practices of minority people, mm-hmm. but it's still not the best place. So can't find any clothes. You can't really, there are no radio stations. There's just there's nothing to eat around here. I mean, but that's everywhere around here. I mean, and I'm not talking about culture at this point. I'm just saying there's just nothing here.
Yeah.
And the mom and pop shops, they just won't allow anything, any change to come in. So we can't get Culver's. We can't get Red Lobster. We can't get Applebee's. We can't get, you know, those types of restaurants. It's just the little mom and pop shops. We've lost JCPenney's. We've lost Kmart. You know, we've lost Curlin's on the square. You know, we're losing so many things.
So it goes without saying that the conversation about race can be very difficult. That's why Dr. Simpson, to first explain the purpose and the rationale behind the statement of understanding contract. Each student in his class signs this statement of understanding contract, which essentially gives yourself and others the space to be imperfect.
This was especially helpful for students like myself who were afraid to speak up in fear that I would say something dumb. And it's a fear that's very real still today. Who doesn't have this fear, right? But the contract is more than that. It gives you freedom to be who you are and express the way you see things. But it's also more than that. By signing the contract, you commit to working on changing any false and inaccurate beliefs that reveal itself and contribute to oppressive structures.
Students listening should be prepared to answer the following discussion questions. Number one, explain in your own words the purpose of the statement of understanding contract. Number two, according to Dr. Simpson, the best learning that takes place in his classes are unlearning. What did he mean by this, and provide a specific example? And finally, number three, what is the quote that Dr. Simpson gives that is worthy of not only being repeated, but posted in your locker ASAP?
That contract was one.
These are the things that, I mean, it kind of puts us all on the same page for us to say, you know, here are the things that I'm struggling with.
Yeah.
And now I have I call them all a statement of understanding.
Okay.
It says, I hereby have permission to be imperfect with regards to race, class, and gender. Or you can say sexism, classism, homophobia, heterosexism, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it goes on to say, it is okay if I do not know all of the answers, or if at times my ignorance and misunderstanding become obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, because we have this mindset that, you know, to be a learner, we have to already come in learned. We have to already come in knowing. You know, but what really takes place is unlearning. You sit down to learn, and in the midst of learning, you unlearn. And unlearning is what's most difficult, you know. So is that it goes on to say, I have permission to ask questions that appear stupid. And I like to use that word because that's the language that, you know, a lot of the high school kids are, when I use this for freshmen, incoming freshmen, they know that language. We as adults generally don't use that, but, you know, I have permission to ask questions that appear stupid. I have permission to struggle with these issues and be upfront and honest, candid about my feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and this puts everybody, like I said, on a level playing ground, say, okay, well, it's a question that he's asking and he's jeering at something right now. However, he has permission to do this.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to put it on the table and we're going to talk about it. You know, then it goes on to say, I am a product of this culture. You know, and I am who I am. I don't have to feel guilty about what I know or believe, but I do need to take responsibility for what I can do now.
Yeah.
And then it says to try to learn as much as I can and to work to change my false and inaccurate beliefs of oppressive attitudes. You see, and that's the thing that I like. I didn't say this to you guys when you were in the class, but this is something that I've employed since. And it says that to change my inaccurate or oppressive attitudes. And at some juncture in all of our lives, we will be the oppressor of something, somehow. But, and when you think of that, we always look at the oppressor in such a way, is like, you know, they're wrong. Well, they're just doing their job. And I know that sounds crazy for me to say that, but it's not the job of the oppressor to free the oppressed, right?
Yeah.
Think about that now. It's never the job of the oppressor to free the oppressed. He's doing his job. She's doing her job. However, it is the job of the conscious to make the unconscious conscious of their unconscious behavior. I won't say that again, because I know. It's never the job of the oppressor to free the oppressed. You can put this on your wall. It's never the job of the oppressor to free the oppressed. However, it is the job of the conscious, that's you and me, to make the unconscious, we would surmise this is your students, conscious
So you're making them conscious of their unconscious behavior, the things that they do unconsciously, the things that they say unconsciously, the things that they, you know, they walk around their inaccurate and oppressive beliefs and attitudes. It's our job to make them aware of those things. So it's the job of the conscious to make the unconscious conscious of their unconscious behavior. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah.
Just a quick blib here. I asked Dr. Simpson to expand on that last point because it's so important. Dr. Simpson is in the business of education, but a big part of education that people often miss has to do with unlearning. So listen in as Dr. Simpson explains why unlearning is essential when having a conversation about race.
I unlearn every day.
Yeah.
I unlearn every single day. And that's, you know, when I was at the University of Wyoming, one thing that I learned was how to unlearn. Yeah. I'm a part of a lifelong learning community, you know. It's like I took this secret silent induction into this you know, society, which was a society of lifelong learners, meaning that I'll never know it all. I stand in front of all of my classes and you know, though I'm Dr. Simpson and my students say, wow, he got a PhD back in 2000 and wow, he's written 3 books and he's done this and that and the other, you know, I stand before them and I say, I don't know it all.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, there's some things that I know I'm going to learn from you.
Yeah.
So it's no secret that the majority of counties making up Forgottonia are mostly white. In fact, 13 of the 16 counties are at least 90% majority European American. By the way, you can check out specific demographics by visiting our website, ForgottoniaProject.com.
And we mention this because it's essential that we understand how our context shapes how we think about race.
And according to Dr. Simpson, if we don't have a lot of experience interacting with different cultures, then we risk relying too heavily on media to inform us.
And if you recall from our past podcast episode about value pollution, the intention of most media is to entertain and not necessarily educate.
Now, since we've established that context is more important when talking about race, it's very important to understand that Mr. Brewer's conversation about race with Dr. Simpson took place in the days after the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia.
In case you don't recall this incident, white supremacist groups descended on the city in August of 2017 to protest the removal of a Robert E. Lee statue. After the demonstration, a white nationalist drove a car into a group of people protesting the rally. One person was killed and 19 others were injured.
In this final portion of our podcast, Dr. Simpson not only addresses why it's problematic to celebrate a perceived white heritage, but he addresses criticism that he received for teaching African American studies.
Questions for students on this segment include, number one, what advice does Dr. Simpson give to students who grow up in a predominantly white community? Number two, how does Dr. Simpson respond to criticism for having a degree in African American studies? Number three, when Dr. Simpson was younger, he was required to play the music of the Djem Society. What is the Djem Society? And what are other examples of this in culture outside of music? And number four, we are all hyphens. Explain the meaning behind this quote from Dr. Simpson.
The advice that I would give those students is, I mean, you've got to get out. You've got to, at some point, not let television and the media become your only education of people who are different from you. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look at it, see, I'm a humanist, and you are as well. But as a humanist, you know, I realize that we all bleed the same color. We all feel the same way. We laugh, we cry, we enjoy, we dislike, you know. We feel, we love, we hate, you know. And I think it's important that regardless of a person's background or makeup or the color of their skin or the texture of their hair or whatever, they still can feel the exact same way.
Yeah.
You know, they still react to the same things because we're human.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I'm just so disgruntled at what's going on in Virginia right now.
I mean, it's like, gosh, you would think we, you know, took a time warp back into the 60s, the 50s, you know. And this is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I heard a guy on there saying, we're trying to preserve our heritage. What do you mean? Yeah. You know? What do you mean? I just can't understand that, because people would say things, and I know I'm off on a rabbit trail right now.
No, this is perfect.
Well, people would say things like, well, he's a professor in the Department of Liberal Arts and Sciences. Yes, but he said that he got his degree in African-American studies. Well, you don't find people getting degrees in white American studies. Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's the problem there, because I said African-American, not black American, as, you know, the black American would parallel white American. Mm-hmm. African-American parallels European American, mm-hmm. you see,
yeah.
because it's a continent. Hyphen American.
Yeah.
Africa is a continent,
yeah.
not a country.
Yeah.
Europe is a continent, yeah. not a country.
Yeah.
And so to say African American and white American, or black American and European, you know, it's yeah. mixing apples and oranges. But the point I'm trying to make in all of that is that people would say, well, there's no white American studies and no European American studies. And you know this, and I'm sure you've shared this with your students already. The curriculum is European American in nature.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And so it's just like the story I'm certain I told you guys years ago when I went to Alabama State University, which is the HBCU. I was a music major, you know. My parents put me in piano at third grade, and I took classical piano
yeah.
all the way up through my senior year in high school, and you know, my music scholarships were in clarinet and piano, and I took applied piano all the way up to my junior year. All the way into that time, I was required to play music of what I call the Dwem Society. You remember I mentioned the Dwem
mm-hmm.
Society, dead white European males.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, never was I able to play any Scott Joplin. Never was I ever allowed to play or introduced to William Grant Steele, you know, or any of these African-American men or women, you know, Margaret Bonds, who were classical composers. It was always Beethoven, Bach, Handel, Chopin, you know, Mussorgsky, you know, and those from Russia, and those types of things. So it was always that. So what was interesting to note about all of that yet and still is, when I was at Alabama State, even the black professors there would hear me playing gospel or jazz or blues or something like that, and they would say, don't play that. Don't play that. Don't tear my pianos up with that. And I'm thinking, music is music, just like people are people. What do you mean? An E-flat is an E-flat.
Yeah.
Just like a man is a man, a woman is a woman.
Yeah.
You know? And so, going back around to the initial question, the advice that I would give your students is to just learn how to get ethnic.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Everybody has an ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to what they may believe, they're ethnic people. And I did an experiment when I taught a university 210 course where we all had to do trace our, this is before Ancestry.com was popular, you know, to ask questions of their mom and their dad and if their grandparents were alive and aunts and uncles and, you know, these types of things of who are my relatives. And everybody in the course, you know, they were able to trace back to either slavery,
mm-hmm.
which we knew slaves were brought here from Africa, or they were able to trace back to Europe or to other countries outside of the United States. The point was this: there was nobody here who could say, well, we're American.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we're not American. We're hybrids of some sort.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're European American, whether you're German, Dutch, Swedish, or whatever, you know, Russian. It you're a hyphen,
yeah.
and that's what a lot of these kids in rural America are inundated with, that we're white people,
yeah.
and there's nothing bad about being white, just like there's nothing bad about being black. It has its pitfalls and it has its ups and downs,
yeah.
in any race, you know, and there's a very thin line of demarcation between classism and racism,
yeah.
you know. And I think that's more of the issue with ruralites, is that it's a class thing more so than a race thing. Because even in Cuba, I'm certain
mm-hmm.
there are those who are, if I can use this term, well off.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are those, or I'll say this, yeah. there are the haves and the have-nots, you know, even in Cuba.
Yeah.
And, you know, we as humans have always, historically, we've always been ones to differentiate and put, you know, have this totem pole type of thing of who's better, who's at the top, who's at the bottom, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's men are over women, or blondes are over brunettes, or blue eyes are over brown eyes, or, you know what I'm saying, our skinny and fit is over, you know, fat and unfit, you know what I mean, just whatever. So it's just that type of thing. And so to these children, these young people, I would say, learn how to get ethnic. Immerse yourself in the fine arts, mm-hmm. That are outside of not just European in nature. Mm-hmm. Begin to look up some of the African American composers, or the Chinese American composers, or you can go ahead and just look up some of the, and I put American behind all of this, you know, because this is where the exposure is. But I would ask them to look up those composers, or those poets, or those writers.
So, my friend, Quentin, RQ, I should say, this was a really cool talk. Let's recap by sharing something you learned.
I learned that when it comes to having a conversation about race, it's important to give each other permission to be imperfect. Dr. Simpson does this through a statement of understanding contract.
I learned that a key part of this is a willingness to have an open mind and commit to changing any false and inaccurate beliefs that reveal itself. And when it comes to race, unlearning what we think we understand actually may be more important than learning what we don't know.
I learned that regardless of our heritage, the great majority of us are all hyphens.
And I learned about the Juem Society and how the nature of traditional curriculum is typically oriented towards a European-American perspective. And well, my friend, this is it for now, but please look for the second part of our conversation with Dr. Simpson on race, where we talk about things like how to respond to hateful rhetoric and disparaging humor, as well as share lessons learned from a hate incident that occurred in our own community.
Forgotonia is produced by students and teachers at Cuba High School, located in Fulton County, Illinois. You can connect with us with any questions or comments through Facebook or by visiting our very cool website, www.forgotoniaproject.com. In fact, 13 out of the 16 countries are at least...
Ah, you messed up. You messed up. You gotta start.
Counties.
Oh. Quentin thinks counties are countries. Wow. Quentin actually thinks counties are countries.
Wow. Forgotonia is produced by students and teachers at Cuba High School, located in Fulton County, Illinois. You cannot connect with us with any...
You can connect with us. Oh. It's all right.